This is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Paul, hi.
Hi, Susan, and today we have lots on our calendar, but before we call on Civic reporter Dennis Hart and his summary of the local papers in our area, we'll hear from Leanne Harder, who came over to deliver her monthly Story County report before she's due back in Nevada for an 8 a.m. meeting today. Thanks for coming in this morning, Leanne.
Good morning. Well, I'm going to start out, before I forget, to mention there are some road closures coming ahead. In a couple, actually 2 weeks from today and yesterday, Ragbri does hit Story County, and Ames is an overnight stop. That will be on the 24th of July that Ragbri will be coming through Ames. I want to note that the Slater Blacktop, which is R38, it's commonly called Slater Blacktop, from US 30 South is going to be basically closed to traffic. That's how the bikes will be coming in from Boone County. They'll be coming from E57, which is commonly known as the Luther Road, up Slater, up into Ames. Then, of course, within Ames there are a number of road closures, so I encourage folks to go to the Ames website. The next day, though, they leave Ames and they go east to continue their journey through Iowa, and they will be on the Lincoln Highway throughout all of Story County. So between Ames and Nevada, Lincoln Highway will be closed. And then when you get east of Nevada, Lincoln Highway, it will be open to traffic. But when you get over to Colo, the northbound lanes from U.S. Highway 65 onto Lincoln Way will be closed. So you really, if you are traveling around Story County in any manner other than by foot or pedaling on the 24th and 25th, you need to really maybe check websites and check with your local authority what roads are open and closed, and at least anywhere along Highway 30 or Lincoln Highway. Then, continuing the road closure theme, University Avenue is going to be closed here in a couple weeks. That's down by the Research Park. We are grading and paving 530th Avenue from 280th to north, 0.7 miles to Ames City Limits. Actually, it's 260th Street North. The roads will be closed to traffic during that construction. So it's basically when you hit the roundabout and go south down by the Research Park, that will be closed. And it'll take a couple months, but it'll definitely enhance the way you get around down in Southern Ames. Then in August, looking ahead, I'm going to report this again in August, but I want to get the word out now. We are scheduling for upcoming blood drives. Story County for the past 3 or 4 years has partnered with the Red Cross to have blood drives open to the public and, of course, Story County employees. They'll be happening on August 16th and 17th. There'll be one in Ames at the Human Services Center. Both are scheduled from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. The one on Friday, August 17th, will be at the Administration Building in Nevada. You can call 1-800-RED-CROSS, which is 1-800-733-2767, to go ahead and register, or just give me a call and I can get you registered too. And I'm sure everyone has seen the ads out there on TV and radio, how short our blood supply is right now. Good opportunity to give back and feel good about giving blood by donating blood. I feel good about giving back by donating blood. And then Story County Conservation has some pretty exciting news for all those anglers out there. For Hickory Grove Lake, effective immediately, there are some temporary regulations that the Story County Conservation Board have put in place. Hickory Grove Lake is going to be drawn down here in a few months and undergo a complete lake restoration. Well, they have relaxed their fishing regulations for a temporary period. So anglers with a valid fishing license are allowed to harvest any size or number of fish species from Hickory Grove Lake. So you can just go there and spend your entire day there. Any number of fishing poles or jug fishing is allowed. They have to remain in sight of the lines at all times and follow, of course, all fishing regulations and area rules. Trot lines are allowed, but you have to have your name and address attached. But lines cannot be set across the entire water body. Great opportunity to get out there between the hours of 5 a.m. till 10:30 p.m. and enjoy those relaxed fishing regulations at Hickory Grove Lake. And then you can continue to find out more information on the county's website about what's going to be happening with that lake over the next couple of years. It's pretty exciting and pretty dynamic what the results will be. Conservation also asked me to share some information about a new campaign. It's a partnership amongst many entities, but specifically two county departments, Conservation and the Story County Animal Shelter. It's called ROAR, Rehoming Our Animals and Aquariums Responsibly. And I think everyone kind of gets the sense of what that means from the name of it. There are a lot of folks that get animals that end up being a household pet, and then their situation may change, and so they release that pet into the wild, whether that be a snake that goes down by the river, even a frog, or some sort of a lizard. Rehoming those animals into the wild, or dumping aquariums or water garden plants into river streams, lakes, and storm sewers, really can cause harm to the economy and the environment, definitely. What the ROAR is all about is you can come without any questions asked and just give your animal, your pet up to these folks. They will be at the Rummage Rampage event later this month from July 27th to August 2nd. And there'll be, again, no questions asked if you want to bring your animal. Then, if you want to do some yoga in the park and enjoy Dakin's Lake, which is a beautiful amenity up in Northeast Story County, Conservation is hosting a session on Saturday, July 28th from 9 to 10. Dakin's Lake Shelter is at 70613 130th Street up by Zeering. There's no charge and registration is not required, and all experiences and all ages are welcomed. Then, jumping way ahead, and I'm going to share this a couple times, there's an exciting event happening called Wolves, Bears, and Dog Sleds, a Northwoods Adventure. And this is kind of near and dear to the heart, my heart, because it's up in the area that my parents grew up is where it's occurring. Up in northeastern Minnesota, to learn about all the wild carnivores. It's an event co-sponsored by both Story and Polk County Conservation, and that our own Jerry Keyes with Conservation will be part of the leadership team. It's an adventure in the forests and lakes surrounding Eli and the gateway to the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. So again, February 9th to 12th, I would encourage calling Story County Conservation to get more detail and get registered. There is a cost to it. And then last, I want to close with, we have openings for Story County boards and commissions. It's that time of the year that we're seeking volunteers to serve on these various boards and commissions. Applications are available on our website, or you can contact me. I'll give the contact information at the close, and I can get you an application form. They're due by Friday, October 5th at 5 p.m. We have the following boards that have openings. Asset has one opening. Board of Adjustment has one opening. The Board of Health has two openings. Condensation Commission actually has up to 30 openings. Conservation is looking for one individual. Planning and Zoning Commission is looking for two openings. And then Veterans Affairs Commission has two openings as well. So you can send those complete applications to Deb Shildroth, and we can put her name and address on our website too. Or it is on our website. And then I want to close with inviting folks to come check our booth out at the Story County Fair. It runs July 20th through the 26th. We're setting up on the 20th, so maybe don't stop by first thing, but we'll have some goodies and be able to give you information about Story County. As always, I can be reached at lharder@storycountyiowa.gov and check out our website at www.storycountyiowa.gov.
Well, Leanne, you always put so much information in a short time. I would really encourage people to volunteer for those boards, because that's a real way to serve your county, to be involved, and to, sometimes take a stand for various issues. So I really appreciate that. Go to Hickory Grove and fish, because if you don't catch the fish, they die horrible deaths when they drain the lake. So save the fish. Go fish, as they say in the cart. Well, thanks, Leanne. And now, here's Dennis with his report from the pages of the weekly papers and the surrounding area.
Susan and Paul, we're going to start this week with the Boone News Republican, which reported the unfortunate news that two Boone residents died in a three-car crash last Thursday in central Missouri. Jody and James Smith, both 45 years old, died on Interstate 70. Authorities said James Smith slowed down because of a previous crash on the interstate when another car, this one driven by a Missouri man, rear-ended the Smith's car. The Smiths were pronounced dead at the scene. The five occupants of the other car sustained minor injuries. The News Republican also reported that an Ankeny woman died a week ago Monday night when her vehicle rolled over on US 30 just east of Boone. Authorities said 36-year-old Sarah Cook was driving westbound near R Avenue when she lost control and was thrown out of the car. She was pronounced dead on the scene. Meanwhile, a jury found a Boone man guilty of domestic abuse. 42-year-old Justin Guy Hansen faces up to 1 year in jail. Authorities said he and a woman got into an argument and that Hansen grabbed her by the neck from behind and choked her. She recovered from her injuries. And there was also word that the United Community School Board has chosen an interim superintendent. He is John Chalstrom, who will also serve as principal and special education director for the small district, which is between Ames and Boone. He replaces former superintendent Tim Salmon, who left in May. The News Republican also had another story about the ongoing saga of the Whatcha Smokin' Barbecue and Brew Company in Luther. Less than 2 months after owner Tanya Doyle settled a lawsuit filed against her business, she now says that the city of Luther is targeting Whatcha Smokin' through ordinances that regulate such things as noise, fences, vegetation, and fireworks. City officials deny they're trying to run Doyle out of business. And last, but certainly not least in the News Republican, the absolutely unforgettable story that also appeared front page in the Ames Tribune. It's a story of faith, hope, justice, and love, which happened to be the new names of four kittens that were discovered abandoned in a black plastic box that had been taped shut and left in front of the Boone Humane Society building. Small holes had been cut in the top of the box, but the kittens were near death because of heat and dehydration. The Humane Society's director, Vanessa McCutcheon, who found the box, got the kittens out and placed them on ice packs. Then the little creatures were rushed to All Pets Animal Hospital in Ames, where they were put into an oxygen tank and received IV fluids and a variety of medications. The kittens somehow survived. It's a great story indeed. In the Nevada Journal, a story that also appeared in the other papers we look at each week. It's a long takeout about how communities in Iowa are trying to prevent suicides. Iowa's suicide rate has risen 36% since 1999. Every 20 hours, someone in Iowa dies from suicide. It is the second leading cause of death for people between the ages of 18 and 34. Iowa's public health department budgets $50,000 a year on suicide prevention. State lawmakers have created a 24-hour crisis hotline and passed mandatory requirements for the state's 14 mental health regions to create crisis services for people. But the regions themselves will have to fund those services. In the Story City Herald, word that one man died on Sunday afternoon when he lost control of his car and crashed into a utility pole on U.S. Highway 69 near the Story and Hamilton County line. He's identified as 34-year-old Chad Chelsvig of Iowa Falls. Authorities said Chelsvig was not wearing a seatbelt. Also in the Herald, a reminder that the old Randall Cemetery Walk will take place this evening, Wednesday, starting at 6:30. The cemetery, north of Randall, has several of its early Danish settlers buried there. Visitors will learn about the unique metal headstones and the symbols on those headstones. In the Tri-County Times, word that no one was injured when a grocery store tractor trailer plowed into a semi last Thursday on Interstate 35 outside Huxley. Authorities said a flatbed semi carrying concrete slabs had broken down. A tractor trailer from the Fairway grocery chain drove into the other vehicle. The stalled truck had its emergency flashers on, and its driver had set out its warning triangles. The northbound inside lane of the interstate was closed for a couple of hours. And the Times reports that a new monarch butterfly habitat is on its way to Kelly. The Des Moines-based Kemen Industries will establish a butterfly station at its Research Agronomy Center in Kelly. It's part of a campaign started last year in Iowa to help state ethanol and biodiesel producers create monarch habitats on green spaces surrounding biofuel plants. And that, Susan and Paul, is our weekly summary of news from the pages of the Boone News Republican, the Nevada Journal, the Story City Herald, and the Tri-County Times. Of course, the papers themselves will have more news when their print editions come out this week. I'm Dennis Hart, and I'll be back here live on Friday morning with news from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
Well, thanks, Dennis. That was quite a report. A lot of death and mayhem, but I'm glad the kittens survived. Now, I hope we have something more cheerful for the rest of the hour, Susan.
Yes, the rest of the program consists of announcements and interviews that make you proud to be an Iowan, in spite of the floods, accidents, and suicides.
Now, how do you plan to accomplish that, Susan?
Everything that I found this week had a bright side. Even the old news that the Story County Duck Race has been rescheduled for July 17th, next Tuesday. Apparently, the Story City Greater Chamber was anxious that there would wouldn't be enough ducks entered to win all the prizes. So they sent over their summer intern, Micah Hales, with this report.
Hi, my name is Micah Hales. I'm coming to you from the Story City Greater Chamber Connection. We've got several events coming up soon. We've got the Skunk River Duck Race that we are putting on.
Explain what a duck is.
Plastic duck, believe it or not. And you put it in the Skunk River, and if your duck wins, then you get a $1,000 grand prize from MBS Genetics, or there's plenty of other prizes that they'll also give away. And the tickets are on sale at the Story City Greater Chamber Connection office, Great Western Bank, Reliant Savings Bank. Coinciding with that, there will also be a picnic in the park that will go on. You can get a burger, hot dog, chips, and a drink. And this is all going to be happening on July 17th. We also have another event coming up. We have Family Movie Night at the Carousel in Story City's North Park. We'll be hosting a movie night. We'll be playing Despicable Me 3. So make sure to bring all of your Minion gear, blankets, and lawn chairs for that. There will also be popcorn from 7 to 9 p.m., courtesy of Century 21 Real Estate, Brandy Nelson. They'll also be providing water and lemonade. The movie, I guess, will start at 9:15 p.m. But you can come earlier. The event will go from 6 to about 9 when the movie starts. We also have National Carousel Day coming up on July 25th. People come from all over the country for National Carousel Day to go see the antique carousel in Story City. That event will be from 5 to 8 p.m. We'll have more details about that later. And then there's also a festival coming up in Story City and the South Park on July 14th. That would be this coming Saturday. There's going to be all sorts of different kinds of stuff. There's going to be comedian shows. There'll be BMX biking, which will be pretty cool. And then lots of musical acts, including Josh Brewer, Holland, Rachel Hope, Bobby Bugatti, Abby Robertson, Jonathan Stone, and Cade Thompson. So that'll be another event that you can come out to in Story City, sponsored by the City of Story City. We're looking forward to seeing you in Story City at one of these events in the upcoming weeks. Thank you.
As I listened to Micah's report, I couldn't help wondering just what a release of 100 or hundreds, I guess, of yellow rubber duckies would look like, because that's, of course, what what those ducks are. Now, you must have witnessed this event in the past, haven't you, Paul?
Oh, yes. There are thousands of duckies out there. And we have teenage boys out in the water. Hopefully, it's not too high water now for them to stand in the river. And there are big booms, you know, and they end in a V. And so no duck goes downstream as an orphan. They're all captured. And they're in order because everything flows into a V. So you can identify the number one ducky who is worth $1,000. But there are all kinds of prizes from various merchants. And a friend of mine, when he was a teenager, in the paper it was published that he'd won a tea set. And he was very deeply embarrassed that he was the proud owner of a tea set. So people donate prizes, merchants, companies, and they publish a list of the winners. So if you're in the duck race and you finish in the prizes, you're a celebrity of sorts.
The Story City Herald said this week that there were 70 prizes in addition to the $1,000 grand prize. So there's a lot of incentive to go get your duck.
Yeah, you talk to people at the Greater Chamber Connection in Story City, and you can purchase your ducks, and maybe you're the lucky duck. Well, now, in case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and surrounding area, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We just heard from Micah Hales telling us about the celebration scheduled in Story City for the rest of July.
We turn to KHOI nature reporter Pat Schlarbaum with a phenology about the blue jay. Now, this is a real bird, not a plastic one. A very pretty bird that may have an undeservedly bad reputation. Then we'll hear from Story County Conservation about their nominee for the Governor's Volunteer Award. But first, the blue jay.
Technology is recording nature's happenings when they occur.
the first firefly of spring or the last osprey of autumn are noted in a journal for future reference and comparisons from year to year. And as Lee Searles of Coon Rapids writes, phenology is the study of natural cycles in the lives of living animals and plants. Today's phenology are the blue jays. This common large songbird is familiar to many people with its perky crest, blue, white, and black plumage, and noisy calls. The black bridle across the face, nape, and throat varies extensively and may help blue jays recognize one another. Blue jays are known for their intelligence in complex social systems with tight family bonds. Their fondness for acorns is credited with helping spread oak trees after the last glacial period. One of the loudest and most colorful birds of the backyards and woodlots, the blue jay is unmistakable, intelligent, and adaptable. It may feed on almost anything, and it is quick to take advantage of bird feeders. And at a newly filled bird feeder, they could dominate. Any visitor would be accosted and bullied to make room for the mighty blue jay. They will strafe a mixture of bird seed in all directions to uncover the single sunflower seed they desire. Yet their amazing blue plumage adds considerably to a natural landscape. The pigment in blue jay feathers is melanin, which is brown. The blue color is caused by scattering light through modified cells on the surface of the feather barbs. A walk in the woods will usually herald the raucous alarm call of the blue jay. It's as if their job is to alert all woodland habitants that a human has ventured forth into their domain. Around the community, it seems everything is under their scrutiny. They can take their security concerns to an extreme. Other nesting birds take heed of their controlling ways. Besides their raucous jay, jay, jay calls, blue jays make a variety of musical notes, and they can do a remarkable imitation of the scream of a red-shouldered hawk. Not always conspicuous, blue jays slip furtively through the trees when tending their own nest or going to rob the nest of another bird. Blue jays are known to take and eat eggs and nestlings of other birds, but we don't know how common this is. In an extensive study of blue jay feeding habits, most of their diet was composed of insects and nuts. Their nest would rank on the spindly end of the spectrum. The nest will have 4 to 5 greenish or buff eggs, spotted with brown and gray. Incubation is by both parents about 16 to 18 days. Both parents bring food for nestlings, and young leave the nest 17 to 21 days after hatching. Recently, young, fuzzy, immature blue jays were spilling from their nest during the heat of the afternoon. The dynamic duo were discovered by neighborhood youth. The best advice for their short-term care is returning them to the nest. The best climber in the group can usually return young to their nest, which is the best outcome. Like other songbirds, touching the young will not cause the parents to abandon them, as their sense of smell is very limited. Thousands of blue jays migrate in flocks along the Great Lakes and Atlantic coasts, but much about their migration is yet to be learned. Some are present throughout winter in all parts of their range. Young jays may be more likely to migrate than adults, but many adults also migrate. Some jays migrate south 1 year, stay north the next winter, and then migrate south again the next year. No one has worked out why they migrate, when they do, and their migration remains a mystery of nature. The oldest known wild banded blue jay was at least 26 years, 11 months old. It had been banded in the Newfoundland area in 1989 and found there again in 2016. And that is our phenology for today about blue jays in Iowa. This is Pat Schleibaum with KHOY Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames. Become a member or find the donate button at khoifm.org.
While we're in nature, let's turn to Story County Conservation, which announces that Landra Reese of Boone received a Governor's Volunteer Award from Governor Kim Reynolds and Lieutenant Governor Adam Gregg during a special recognition ceremony held Tuesday, June 19th in Pleasant Hill. Erica Place writes this. She couldn't be with us today. She's conducting a camp out at Story County Conservation. Landra was honored with an individual award by Story County Conservation. Landra has volunteered with SCC for many years and has become a great advocate for our natural resources. She is always eager to assist wherever she can, including at large festivals, with trail work or invasive species removal, and with environmental education programs. She has sprung into action several times when SCC was looking for last-minute help. Her excitement is contagious. Coordinated by Volunteer Iowa, the Governor's Volunteer Award program, now in its 35th year, recognizes the dedicated people who volunteer their time and talent to help fulfill the missions of Iowa nonprofits, charitable organizations, and government entities. The program provides an easy way for these organizations to honor their volunteers with prestigious state-level award. More than 500 awards are being presented this year during ceremonies held in several locations around the state. It is estimated that more than 2,000 hours of service, with an economic impact of nearly $500,000, were served by this year's honorees during the past 12 months.
Well, now, Susan, those are impressive figures, but I believe volunteers are what keeps Iowa going. So I'd love to hear more about this young volunteer.
You won't be surprised that I got an interview with Landra Reese yesterday for her description of why she volunteers and what she's learned about the other award winners.
I guess I'll just do a little background on myself. My name's Landra, and I'm from Boone, and I graduated high school on this past December. I was homeschooled, and I went to DMAC for a lot of classes this past year. And then this last spring semester, I worked at the Iowa State Capitol in Des Moines, so I lived in Des Moines. And then this fall, I'm going to Drake University to study environmental science and law, politics, and society. So having just graduated, I believe I was one of the youngest to get a volunteer award from the state of Iowa. And there were a few groups, like there was, I believe, a group from Greene County that was full of young people, but it was a group that was getting it, and then also a fraternity from Ames also received an award, but I believe I was one of the youngest to receive an award just by myself, just a personal award, if I recall correctly.
Were these awards primarily for environmental volunteering?
No, so these are the Governor's Volunteer Service Awards, and they're for all sorts of people. There were people who had donated blood, and so they got awards for that. There were people who had worked with hospice and volunteered in hospice. There were people who had volunteered with Meals on Wheels. Somebody who, both him and his dog got an award because his dog was a service dog, and he had, for so many years taken his dog to a hospital and helped them out, with just some anxiety and some service. And so, yeah, it was just kind of all around. I am honestly not positive about the nomination process because I obviously didn't go through that. But I believe that it's kind of anyone who has been served or any organizations who have been served by someone can nominate somebody for the great works that they've done. My service and volunteering has kind of changed throughout the years, but I've always done a lot of it. So I was very heavily involved in 4-H growing up. I still am. Actually, next week is the Boone County Fair, and so I'm kind of getting ready for that right now. And so, you know, it just started out as doing monthly projects both with my club and for myself. And as I began to see more needs, like you said, I'm a true Iowan, so I took initiative and did what I could to help fix them and help relieve those needs and those problems. And so, you know, that change from donating food to our local food shelter at Impact, or volunteering to pick up trash at a local county park, to then larger roles and more sustainable roles with Boone County Conservation, Story County Conservation. I volunteered. I did a project with Dallas County Conservation. And then I've also volunteered with Iowa DNR in their environmental education and shooting sports areas and their hunter education, just because those are the things that I found that I was so passionate about. And that's really, really what I enjoy volunteering in, and how I enjoy serving. And then that's kind of changed learning more about environmental awareness and issues and environmental justice. That's changed to sort of, you know, volunteer more and do more service in political and policy programs. And so I volunteered for Iowa's Water and Land Legacy, doing citizen lobbying at the state capitol, because, you know, our funding of natural resources has decreased a lot over the years. And as state budget, you know, as the state budget changes, natural resources is one of the first things to go. And to me, it's one of the most important to ensure public health, to ensure environmental health, to ensure that we have young people who are staying here, to ensure that we have a robust economy, and that, you know, really we have a great state for everyone who lives here and everyone who comes here. And so I guess just kind of serving and being a volunteer has shaped my worldview and how, what I believe in and how I want to live out my life and what I want to do for careers. And so it's been very important, not only for those who are serving, but it's been so very important for me, and just knowing that I can have a hand in change, and that what I can do with my spare time, instead of, you know, doing something for myself, I can do something for others, and it will reflect back on me and change me for the better.
Thank you, Landra. And just in case anybody thinks that Landra only works in Iowa, she does also, on her website, she quotes John Muir, that you need to clear your soul by going out in climbing a mountain. And I think she's done some of that this summer. I would like to make a little correction. I just realized that I misspoke when I estimated that more than 20,000 hours of service. So there are a lot of people working a lot hard and getting recognized for it.
Yep, that's a lot of hours of service, 20,000. And that means a lot's being accomplished by people who aren't being paid. You know?
And there are a lot of people who didn't get these awards who put in a lot more hours than that.
It's always hard to pick a winner when all these volunteers are involved. This is KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM. And you just heard from Landra Reese telling us about how nature has inspired her. And now Pat Schlarbaum has come back to tell us about an inspiring event coming up at the Blank Park Zoo this weekend.
There will be an eagle program at the Blank Park Zoo in Des Moines. On Sunday, July 15th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., featured speakers will be Chief Golden Light Eagle of the Ahunktuan, or Yankton Nation, at Greenwood, South Dakota. Chief Lauren Zephyr will be accompanied by a native drum of singers and supporters. In conjunction with honoring eagles, wildlife rehabilitation will be featured as eagles are dying from lead ammunition and fishing gear. Eagles are scavengers, and a small piece of lead shrapnel or fishing sinker can kill eagles. Efforts are underway to replace lead with copper or other non-toxic alternatives. Only a small piece of lead shrapnel, the size of a kernel of rice, can kill our national symbol. Activities from eagle art for the kids to exhibition of the zoo's educational eagles will be included. DNR biologist Stephanie Shepherd will present her volunteer wildlife monitoring program to train volunteers to observe and report nesting eagles in Iowa. So come out to hear native voices, eagle professionals, and efforts underway to save eagles from lead poisoning. Plan to attend Sunday, July 15th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Blank Park Zoo at 7401 Southwest 9th in Des Moines. This will be a tremendous opportunity to learn about these majestic birds and efforts to keep eagles flying freely from this generation to the next and the next forever.
On June 30th, there were national events throughout the country to give voice to the anguish many people felt over the separation of immigrant, often refugee, children from their parents. There were 700 Families Belong Together rallies around the country, several in Iowa. The only one near our listening area was in Des Moines, and I was frustrated at how little news of that I saw. The Des Moines Register had just one small article with a picture. The article said there were 100 people there, but told little about it. So I found someone who participated, Suzanne Zilber, to provide a first-hand account, including why she went.
You know, certainly it was very hot, and the rally was well organized. They had water for people if needed, and they had a good speaker system, and we were on the east side of the Capitol where there was shade. So there were a few brave folks, maybe that's the 100 they counted, that were right in front of where the speakers were, and that a lot of us, including me and my husband, were sort of on this periphery where there was shade. And so I would have estimated that there would have been 300 people there, because we were so spread out. And the Capitol was also open, so that was supportive, and that we could go in and use the restroom or get more water. The lineup of speakers was well organized, and there were people with signs, the most basic sign, Families Belong Together. There was maybe one person with a Abolish ICE placard. There were the speakers often would speak both. There would be Spanish, and then there would be English for all the speakers. And the speakers that I remember, one person spoke about the young man from Des Moines who had been deported and then murdered very soon after his deportation. And, you know, he had pretty much spent his whole life here in the United States. And, you know, it was a tragedy for his family that this happened. And then Mark Stringer, who formerly was the minister at the Unitarian Universalist congregation in Des Moines, is now the director of the ACLU. And he spoke well about the issues, and, you know, so there were, it was, I think, a good representation of speakers, and I don't remember, you know, there was some repetition, of course, of the points that were being made about the devastating impact on the children and on the families. And of course, as a psychologist, I have seen all the different statements coming through my email box from different associations, including the American Psychological Association, and about how this separation is going to be permanently damaging and traumatic for these little children. And I agree with that.
Well, you say you are a psychologist. Mm-hmm. Did that have anything to do with the reason you came to this? Do you work with children?
I don't work with children, but I work with adults who have been traumatized as children and who've experienced, you know, early childhood trauma that affects them, that requires intensive treatment now, and some of it's not really repairable. And, yeah, I just felt like it was important to show up, and as somebody who isn't comfortable with our country behaving this way.
Well, you know, that demonstration was just a week before former Governor Robert Ray died. And he did so much for refugees when he was governor. I worked with the Employment Security Commission, the employment office, during that time we accepted refugees. So we worked with Robert Ray and his staff on job placement issues for refugees and the boat people who came over. And in a room with Robert Ray, you're aware that he's just a kind, soft-spoken person who is non-judgmental, helpful, and a real humanitarian. So I was honored to know Governor Ray and will miss him.
Well, he was working for refugees even to his very last months. Here is a speech he made just this year to encourage people to volunteer or contribute to the Iowa International Center.
We have a tradition here in Iowa of welcoming people from all over the world. It was very satisfying to me and to the Iowans who stepped forward and opened their hearts to help people fleeing from Vietnam, Cambodia, and Thailand. That was over 30 years ago. And that wonderful tradition is what the Iowa Council for International Understanding has been about. I want to congratulate this important agency on the capacity to grow and expand its services. Recently, they announced their new name, the Iowa International Center. The new name really fits what they do. It is a center for a wide range of international resources. The Iowa International Center provides critical information for immigrants and refugees, which includes their excellent statewide multilingual resource guide. The guide helps new people arriving in Iowa learn where they can find housing, learn to speak English, find a job, and much more. The center also provides educational programs through their Pioneer Hybrid International Dialogue Series and their programs with young people from all over the world. They offer interpretation and translation services in over 50 different languages. And they bring global leaders to Iowa to promote public diplomacy. These international visitor programs build personal and professional connections between Iowans and leaders from around the world. I should add, this work also helps Iowa's economy grow. New jobs have been created, and bright new minds have added to Iowa's culture and intellectual interest. As I listen to the names of the valedictorians graduated from our high schools, I often hear Vietnamese, Chinese, Bosnians, Sudanese, and a whole world represented in the names of our graduates. We have attracted some of the best and brightest people from around the world. The Iowa International Center is about to celebrate its 75th anniversary. It is the oldest and most established international agency to serve Iowans. As a strong supporter, I want to thank the Iowa International Center for keeping the dream alive and for making Iowa the welcoming place we want it to be. Keep up the good work for the next 75 years.
Most of us, that's just an introduction to the Iowa International Center. We'll return to the history and future work of the Iowa International Center in later programs. But whatever we do is a suitable tribute to Robert Ray, whose compassion and vision has made a lasting difference to Iowa, something to celebrate today as we honor his memory.
Well, now, our final guest today is Kim Hanna of Raising Readers in Story County. To tell us about this amazing organization, we originally contacted you because of Raising Readers just added Huxley to the list of libraries that host the summer reading program called the Harrison Barnes Academy. Let's start with that. What is the Harrison Barnes Academy?
So our Harrison Barnes Reading Academy is, it's actually two programs. We have an after-school program during the school year, and then we have a summer tutoring program that is 6 weeks long that we are in week four of right now. The after-school program is October through April and matches volunteers with children from kindergarten to third grade one-on-one to do 45-minute tutoring sessions to really help with their literacy skills, to add to what they're getting in school to make sure that they are going to be at grade level by the end of third grade. And then our summer program, the goal of that one is to maintain reading levels over the summer to avoid the summer slide so that children are starting school in the fall at least where they finish school in the spring.
So that's a commendable idea. I've heard of the summer slide.
Yep.
In fact, I think I'm a little less confident this summer myself. So now, how is this connected with Harrison Barnes?
So Harrison has funded the program this past year. He's been a very generous donor to us and to the organization. So we honor him by calling the program his Reading Academy. And he was able to video chat with the students in the after-school program the last 2 years. He's provided books for the kids, and then he's actually in town next week for his basketball camp. So we're going to bring him to a couple of the sites so he can see the kids benefiting from his generosity.
Well, you know,
everyone talks about the fabulous salaries being paid to professional athletes. And I don't argue with that, as long as they share and provide opportunities for others. And certainly Harrison Barnes is doing that for the area where he grew up, where he has a strong identity. Now, in these programs, are they referred from schools as children who might have some reading difficulties, or can anyone come? Is there a selection process?
The after-school program, we really pull first from the kids who were in the summer program so that we can really help the children that have really would really benefit from a little bit more literacy attention during the school year on top of what they're getting at school. The summer program, we recruit through teachers through the schools. We have a lot of families that come back year after year and do the program. We love that. We love seeing the kids growing up in the program, and then little brothers and sisters coming into the program once they've started kindergarten. The summer program is anyone is able to sign up and be in the program. The after school, once we have made sure that the children that were in the summer program that would really benefit either have signed up or can't, we know they can't do it, then we open it up. We have limited space for the after school program because that program only takes place at the public library in Ames and at Central Elementary in Nevada.
Now, there's a list of libraries. How many libraries participate with this program?
Well, we have a site for the summer program at the Huxley Public Library and at the Ames Public Library. And then the after-school program is at the library in Ames. We don't have sites in the other public libraries, but we do advertise through those libraries to let kids know about the program.
Well, I'll bet you that word of mouth will spread this to other libraries in Story County.
Mm-hmm.
And you might have a problem funding or making sure you cover all the opportunities to run this program.
Our biggest issue is always volunteers, getting enough volunteers to make the programs possible because it is a one-to-one ratio. This year, this summer alone, we have over 93 volunteers making the program possible through either being a volunteer or being a sub to fill in when our volunteers are on vacation.
Well, what satisfying work. If you're a volunteer and you help a young person acquire the skill that's so crucial to being a functioning member of society. You know, I mentor at the elementary school in Roland Story, and I was honored to teach little Alan how to tie his shoe.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, this is a lifetime skill, and he was so proud. It just came up because he was walking around with shoes untied. So I taught him how to tie his shoe. Well, this was tremendous for me. And so the volunteers get that same positive feedback, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And they come back. We have a lot of volunteers that have volunteered for several years in these programs.
Oh, yeah. They're hooked on it, aren't they? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what's a typical day like the summer program? What happens?
Sure. Our summer program is we have 10 sites. We have sites in Ames, Nevada, and Huxley. We have, there are 2 45-minute sessions for each child. So your child is either going on Monday and Wednesday or Tuesday and Thursday, depending on the site. Our Nevada sites are Monday, Wednesday. Our Huxley site is Tuesday, Thursday. And the Ames sites are either Monday, Wednesday or Tuesday, Thursday. They are 45-minute sessions. So the first 10 to 15 minutes, the volunteer is reading to the child at a book at a higher level than the child is currently reading. And then we have the child read to the volunteer at their reading level, 1 to 2 books, depending on how old they are, what their reading level is, what their interest is. And then we do writing exercises, creative writing, storytelling, and word sort, so that they're working on their creativity, their writing, their letters, depending on how old they are, and And then we have literacy games. We use Bananagrams. We use...
Wait a minute. Bananagrams?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Yep. So Bananagrams. We use Bananagram tiles to do word ladders, to do younger versions of Scrabble. We pull out vocabulary words out of the stories that they're reading and have them spell depending on how much they enjoy doing word sorts. We can kind of play around with the word sorts a little bit and use Bananagrams instead also.
What's a new I've acquired a new word for my vocabulary. Now it sounds to me like we're trying to make this interesting and fun.
Yes.
So that the kids don't dread this.
Yes.
But they're actually getting some very tangible help. And so basically you're talking about programs in libraries. Now there's something here about reading corners and doctor's offices. Mm-hmm. What are those?
So that's another program that we have. We were started by bringing the Reach Out and Read program to Story County, which is the children's book at All Well Child Checkups from 6 months to 5 years. Mm-hmm. And soon after that, Raising Readers started putting reading corners in those same doctor's offices as well as human service organization offices throughout Story County so that families can read together before they go in for their appointments. It helps calm everybody down a little bit. Some of those books end up in the actual exam room while they're waiting for the doctor to come in and read. The primary pediatrics office at McFarland took out their television because the reading corner was so popular, and everyone has said a lot of positive things about not having a TV.
I love that. They took the TV out, replaced it with books.
Yep. Oh. Yep. So, and we continue to add reading corners when we can to different offices. We are at all the McFarland and Story County Medical Clinics. We are at reading corners at primary health care, YSS offices, MICA, Story County Dental, several other offices.
Well, if I were the marketing director, I would say that's great penetration of the market. You've really been creative about not only setting up the programs, but also making opportunities available in places where they may not expect that, like the doctor's waiting room. Mm-hmm. That's really creative to do that. And it really is crucial. Everyone in our audience needs to know that a child needs to have reading competency by third grade or they might be held back. Is that correct?
Studies show that if you are not at reading level by third grade, you have a higher risk of middle school, high school dropout, not going on to a 2 or 4 year degree or trade school, and struggling without having that in your background. It also plays a huge role in attendance. And so one of the things that as part of the greater campaign for grade level reading, we work really hard on promoting attendance, because if they're not coming to the program, they're not getting very much out of the program.
Well, our guest was Kim Hanna of Raising Readers in Story County. What an amazing program, an opportunity for kids to catch up in reading, and not only to do that during the school year, but also avoiding the summer slide. Thank you very much, Kim Hanna.
Mm-hmm. Before we close our show today, we need to announce that at 7 p.m. tonight, during the hour that KHOI usually plays a rebroadcast of this morning's local talk, we will be hosting one of the Pantorium sessions, folk singer Nick Mühlbauer. Nick comes from an appreciation for the folkway traditions he has inherited and a genuine love of his community in Ames. Come meet Nick and hear him perform live at 410 Douglas this evening, or be a virtual audience member at 89.1 FM. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Paul Wearson and I, Susan Franzen, have been your hosts for today. Other voices you heard were Dennis Hart, Leanne Harter,
Micah Hales,
Pat Schlarbaum, Landa Reese, Suzanne Silver, Governor Robert Ray, and Kim Hanna.
You can listen to today's Local Talk and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's KHOIFM.org.
Local Talk was engineered by Jackie Norman. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show, and if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878, or you can contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide you want to become a member or renew your membership. Do it today. Just look for the yellow donate button.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.
KHOI is sponsored in part by Ames Electric Services, reminding customers to always call in if you have a power outage, even if your neighbor has already called. Register your address and phone number online at www.cityofames.org/outage. Report a power outage by calling 515-239-5240. That's 515-239-5240.